whether you're a people pleaser who struggles with hard conversations or saying no, somebody who wants to be better at negotiating in general, or you just want to improve your ability to think on your feet, the apprenticeship can help. This is our two-day workshop, and it's the final call for our one in Phoenix, Arizona on April 20th and 21st. Now, we're only running two more apprenticeships this year. So if you've been waiting for me to come to your area, I mean this lovingly and respectfully, it's not happening this year. We're doing a lot at home base because I'm working on a new book. So this is your opportunity, and it is open to all professions, all age levels. This is a chance for you to work on having harder conversations, being able to deal with conflict. So whether you lead a team or you're just somebody that wants to get better in the moment, come and check it out. If you have questions, you can reach out to info@artofcoaching.com. It's 2 days, highly interactive, and for anybody that knows there's always room to improve in how we communicate during some of life's toughest moments. Don't risk your relationships. Go to artofcoaching.com/events now. Support for today's show comes from Momentous. It doesn't matter whether you're somebody that wants to be 80 years old and be able to play with your grandkids, or if you're in your 20s now and you just want to be able to push harder and longer. Or for that matter, even if you're just a stay-at-home parent and you want to not get sick as much when you're being around your kids, Momentous has something that can help. We partner with them because they're practical. Anybody we partner with is because they're practical. I use Momentous' omega-3 formula, their grass-fed whey isolate. My wife loves their creatine. We use a wide range of their formulas to help us get through the toughest part of the year. And for us as business owners, that tends to be most of the year. So if you're somebody that wants some more nutritional support and be able to trust that it's been third-party tested, you know what's actually being put in your body, go to livemomentous.com. And if you use the code Brett, that's B-R-E-T-T-1-5, again, B-R-E-T-T-1-5, anywhere on their site, you are going to be able to get a discount, and you're going to get a special discount on some key categories now. It's the same code, but if you use it for their sleep products, you're going to get 40% off. If you're going to use it for a variety of other products, you're going to get anywhere from 15 to 20% off. All you have to do is go to livemomentous.com and use code Brett, B-R-E-T-T-1-5, to get your discount. Check them out. You will not regret it.
Check it out. Check it.
Welcome to the Art of Coaching Podcast. I'm Brett Bartholomew, and at a young age, poor communication nearly cost me my life. Now, I help others navigate the gray area of social interaction, power dynamics, and communication so they can become more adaptable leaders regardless of their profession, age, or situation. This podcast is for everybody who is fascinated with solving people problems. So if you're the no-nonsense type who appreciates frank conversations, advice you can put to use immediately, and learning how others navigate the messy realities of leadership, you're in the right place. I'm glad that you're joining us. Let's dive in. Today's conversation is all about stress management. We often get told, hey, remove stress from your life. Relax. Try not to have so much stress. That's impossible. You're going to have stress. You need stress to adapt and evolve. And that's why I could think of no better person other than my friend Taylor Somerville to have on. Taylor's a breath and performance coach and the owner of Symmetry. He works with organizations, athletes, and individuals across multiple spectrums and helps them really learn how to meet the moment. Now, this isn't one of those things where he's gonna tell you, hey, breathe in through your eyes for 20 seconds, hold it until you choke, breathe out. He gives very, very practical strategies. So whether you're somebody that just has trouble sometimes managing aggression, managing your response to things, managing emotions. It doesn't even have to be aggression or a heightened response. Sometimes just being able to take a beat, recalibrate, and recenter, Taylor is the person for you. We have a lot of fun here. We also talk about when did he get into this? How did he get into this? And what was it like pivoting from a safer industry? This is somebody that had a job, had an established career, and left it to go do this. And I know there's many of you listening that can relate to that. So if you're interested in stress management, or you know somebody in your life that could use a little bit of that, tune in, pay attention, and let's lock and load. I am sitting down with Taylor Somerville. Taylor, it's always a pleasure. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, listen, I want to cut right to the chase, and I told you this. For anybody that doesn't know, Taylor and I are good friends, and one thing that I really appreciate about him is we live in this age of optimization and hype cycles about everything. And I'd love to know, like, because you're somebody that's never really got into that. You teach in a very practical way. You have something that very much can make a large difference in everybody's life. That said, you don't try to sell it like it's some panacea. I just feel like so much, and I know our audience agrees with this because they write in about it a lot. It feels like in a day and age, everything is shoved down our throat. I'd love to know, and we start with the gold, just what even informs the way you coach? How did you get into the breathing space? Talk a little bit about just these things as the audience starts to get to know you, because we all appreciate hearing about other people's coaching styles and journeys.
Yeah, I got into it from dealing with a lot of personal and professional stress, anxiety myself. Spending 15 years in the investment business, I was on a trading floor, so, you know, very high stakes environment. Waking up at 4 a.m., staring at computer screens all day, and then went through a divorce and just really struggling with my ability to handle life in general and in reality, the ups and downs, and got into it to help me and started using the techniques and noticed, man, you know, I was at this point probably 35 years old, 34 years old. It's like I've never even really heard about this stuff. Now I'm starting to use it. Like, why haven't I been taught this the last 30 plus years? Growing up in the South, obviously we didn't teach things like that. And realized there's a lot of power to this. I was able to ground myself in a much more calmer state of mind, able to kind of ride the waves and not let as many things worry me. And so now, you know, I left the investment business in 2017, started Symmetry in 2018, really coaching other people. After doing a lot of training myself, I really kind of go down into the research side, the science side of it, but like the other aspect too. And back then, you know, in Memphis, Tennessee, people were somewhat like, you're a little crazy. Why are you quitting your job at this great company, to do this? But people who knew me well were like, we could kind of see something like this coming. And now it's a little bit everywhere. You know, so one of the things I would say, you know, about like kind of that hype cycle is you see so often on Instagram or social media, somebody talking about something, whether it's related to ice baths or breathing, and it's just like so out there. I'm like, well, that's not true at all. But, you know, I look at it more of these are tools, and they're tools that most of us weren't taught. And if you just know a little bit about it, you can make big changes. And not having to sit down and do a, you know, 20, 30 minute breath session, a lot of benefit in just doing 1-2 minutes or learning how to breathe properly as you're moving throughout your day. More than anything, that's what we work on with a lot of clients, is just kind of creating some space between your day, especially if you're on meetings, on Zoom, staring at your computer all day, and just get away from that for a little bit and create small little shifts as you move throughout your day, as opposed to getting it overcomplicated, trying to be perfectionist, trying to have a 2-hour morning routine because somebody on Instagram said you had to do that. Because they are now successful, so to speak. And so they get up at 4 a.m. and do all this stuff, they probably aren't really doing.
Without question. And I'm glad that you answered that wonderfully. And we're going to get into a lot of different aspects of breathing, the mechanisms behind it, some practical things the audience can do to really highlight your expertise. But one thing I want to jump on earlier is, and I appreciate you being so candid about your background, is it sounds like that it is a tough thing to pivot, to leave a career that, you know, you're invested in, pun intended, that you may even be really good at. I know a lot of our audience relates to this as well. Like, I'm good at this. I've done this a long time. Maybe I went to school for it, whatever it is. But then you get to a point in your life where either because you're more passionate about something else, you've evolved as a human, or circumstances just change, you're like, I think I kind of want to leave this and do something else. So before we get into more about breathing and recovery and stress reduction, can you talk about what that aspect of your journey was like? Like, because it had to be terrifying to a degree, right? Or was it not? Were you just like, no, screw it. I'm done. I know. And I'm moving forward.
It was extremely terrifying at first, you know, and it really all happened. You know, I loved what I was doing. I always loved really the psychology of markets, studying, you know, investment management, enjoyed the math aspect, but really like why people did the same things, why markets effectively do the same thing over and over again. We create these cycles of booms and busts. It's, you know, same psychological aspect, why people are doing the same things. So I loved that. And then when I got, you know, I had this divorce happen, I'm like, oh man, all of a sudden, everything that I'd kind of been planning can change so quickly, and just started looking at everything in my life. And I was just super stressed out. And I was like, do I really want to be sitting here when I'm 60 years old at this same desk, doing the same thing? Because I figured that was somewhat inevitable if I didn't just leave.
Hey, jumping in quick, just to remind you, it's last call for our Phoenix apprenticeship. Whether you're a people pleaser, somebody that struggles with hard conversations, or you just know that poor communication can cost you time, relationships, and opportunities, you will love the apprenticeship. We go over things of how to be more persuasive, how to deal with conflict, how to deal with passive aggressive people, how to lead your team more effectively during times of conflict. If you have a tough conversation that you've been dealing with, or you just know the value of being a better communicator, you're going to love it. It's very hands-on. It's a great opportunity to network with people from other professions. Go to artofcoaching.com/events now to check out more details. That's artofcoaching.com/events now.
Oh man, all of a sudden, everything that I'd kind of been planning can change so quickly, and just started looking at everything in my life, and I was just super stressed out. And I was like, do I really want to be sitting here when I'm 60 years old at this same desk, doing the same thing? Because I figured that was somewhat inevitable if I didn't just leave. So I really started diving into everything and went off to on some retreats and found how beneficial and powerful those were. The XBT retreats, which I think you've done some of that with Laird and Gabby, and just, you know, that going there and seeing all these other people kind of doing this stuff. I had decided, you know, at that point I'd been like writing a weekly newsletter for about a year and a half, and kind of talking to my girlfriend, who is then my girlfriend, now my wife, about everything, and left that and was like, all right, I've got to make a change. Talk to my parents. And my dad was very old school, very, you know, hard, keep going. He worked the same job, probably 40 years.
Wow.
Plus. So I thought he would think I was absolutely insane. And he was totally behind everything. And when he was behind it, and, you know, I was like, well, okay, you know, these people believe I can do it, I can do this. And I basically set a date and I was like, all right, I've got to tell them I'm leaving by Labor Day. And I think I pushed it all the way to the Friday before Labor Day and told them and gave them 1 month. And I quit the a month later.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting about that is, you know, it's one thing to feel like, all right, I know I'm following my intuition. I'm scared, but this is the right thing to do. And then it's another thing to think, how do I make money off this? You know, because that's a reality, right? And people, it's a process, it's a journey. For those of you that are new listeners, make sure to check out our Entrepreneur Essentials course. We have a lot of things on this, but you know, that's the other thing I wonder is, were you, you know, where did you even start thinking about that? You mentioned that you have a passion for economics, you have a good practical sense on your head, you have perspectives. Like, what did you do to think about like, all right, this is what I'm going to do to make money at this instantly?
At that point, honestly, I was like, let me just have enough money as a runway to give me some space to then figure it out. Because yeah. I had no idea. When I quit, I literally was like, I'm taking 3 months off. At that point, I was training for a 24-hour event. And so I was like, I'm going to go through this. And it's the holiday, spend time with my family, friends. And then at the beginning of the new year, I will start, hired a business coach. She helped me kind of put everything together. And, you know, gosh, for the first couple of years, I didn't really make anything. First year, I didn't make anything at all. I lost a lot of money. But I made sure that I had enough money that I was comfortable, that I could at least survive for a little while with my savings before I had to actually start making money.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's something that just people need to be more practical about in general. All right, so you get to this point, you found your niche, you found something you're passionate about. Then it's a matter of finding your audience, right? And I think, but correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you've worked with a wide spectrum of people. You've worked with organizations. I mean, when you're talking about helping people manage their stress and make better decisions, so much of that the majority of it is tied to physiology. But what did you identify as your initial target market? How has that evolved? And for people that pay you as a coach now, like, what does that look like? What does a session look like? How did you find that out? I'd just love to know the nuances of that.
Yeah, so it started out with, I had a sauna on a trailer. And, you know, you see that very common now on Instagram. People have these, you know, but back in 2018, I think there was one other guy.
Yeah.
And I'd contacted him and he basically built it for me. I started taking him around to gyms and yoga studios and I would teach breath sessions. And then I would, you know, throw him in ice baths and throw him in the sauna. We'd go back and forth. And my target market was people I knew, people who were smart, like me, who were into fitness, they were professionals. So I was trying to go to as many people in the Memphis area. And then that kind of branched out all over the South. I started doing Atlanta down, Gulf Coast of Florida, Birmingham, Houston, Austin. I would travel around and do, workshops and, you know, sessions with other coaches that I knew. We would collaborate together on this stuff. And then, you know, I started doing a little bit of one-on-one work at that point, but not really. It was mainly just doing these kind of workshops. Then COVID hit. And all that stopped pretty quickly and started doing a lot more online, doing virtual breath sessions. And at that point was like, okay, everybody's going through this entirely stressful event. Breathing is highly important to what's going on. And it's a respiratory awareness. People are like starting to understand how important that is. Then James Nestor wrote his book, Breathe, and people started reading that and being like, oh, wow, okay, this stuff's really impactful. There's some things that we can do to help ourselves. So I started putting together a coaching program at that point, mainly to have people virtually, because I was like, how long is it going to take before we get back in person? What are we going to do? Yeah. And, you know, I'd been writing, kind of building a email list through that time. And so really that point was started taking on people where, you know, they would be stressed out. They would have something going on. So they would reach out to me. We would just kind of go through some breathing techniques, really help them, ground themselves pretty quickly when they needed to.
Yeah.
And then that branched out, realizing that one session is not going to really help anybody. They can come and learn a technique or two, but they're probably never going to really do it again. They're not going to keep up with the habits of it. They're not going to really understand. So then I ventured out to 4 sessions and then, you know, 8, 12, and kind of settled on about a 3-month program, doing a lot one-on-one in that space where we're really focused on, for one, understanding your stress, your triggers, what happens when you get stressed out, like you mentioned, the physiology of it. Creating awareness first, because without that awareness, there is no change. And then going from, all right, how can we change what we're currently doing? And then let's create a consistent practice and build better habits on top of that, just creating small little shifts in our daily routine. And now we're doing a lot more on the group coaching front as well. And then going in, like you mentioned, businesses and organizations, been doing that for the last few years all over the country. And we'll do a lot virtually and with groups here in Memphis too.
Yeah, well, it's smart. You know, one, I think that's an ingenious, it's very simple, almost to the point that the average listener would skip past it, but it's genius. When you're starting your own thing, start with people you know. You know, we worry so much about building that online audience. I love that you just, and that goes to your fundamentals first mindset. No. Start with people you know, go from there. And then another thing, and we teach this at our brand builder course that you alluded to, is, you know, you don't sell breathing, just like we don't sell communication. You sell what a lack of that or a proper implementation of that represents. You know, for I know when I called out to you as my coach, it's, hey, stress management, being able to manage, you know, like my focus and my state, because I'm balancing so many different things like everybody else. If you came to me and you just want to sit there and make breathing the most unique thing ever and talk about it as if it's the womb of the universe, I'm going to be like, dude, I'm out, you know. But stress, it's like, I'll do anything to do that, because I want more time on this earth with my son. Right. I want to be able to spend more time with my loved ones. And we say the same thing with communication. Hey, if you want, nobody wakes up and just says, I want to breathe better, or I want to communicate better. People do wake up and say, I want less stress in my life. I want less drama in my relationships. I want more opportunities. And so, you know, did it take you a while to find that? Because sometimes we can be so close to our product or the thing that we believe in that we forget about, you know, how other people might view it or how other people might need to hear it, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. And it's something I still work on. but creating that message that, you know, is going to resonate with people, because, you know, I've had clients come to us and say it was really just so much stress and overwhelm, I just had to make it stop right then. And I saw that what you were doing as a way to kind of do that, because I like all the science, I like all the details, I like the nitty gritty, but 99.9% of people don't care.
Right.
They just want a few things that they're going to be able to do and implement. And in reality, they don't need to know it. And they don't need to even know all the advanced techniques. Most people just, I'm very big on like do simple better. I can't remember who originally said that. It was an old coach for the, I think the Chicago Cubs. Can't remember his name. He's the one who won the World Series, but he had a little saying was do simple better. And that is just like, if you can just create those foundational aspects and just keep doing those over and over again, you're going to get so much benefit without even worrying about some of that complex stuff. You know, and it's, you're right. It's not just breathing. Is just one aspect of it. And that's just a tool that you can kind of come back to and stay with. But there's a, you know, a whole lot of other areas, and it's really what can you do that's going to work for you that you're going to keep doing. It's like, you know, what's the best workout? It's the one that you're going to consistently do.
Yeah. Yeah. One
and same thing.
And stress is going to be ubiquitous, right? That's another thing that I think sometimes we struggle with today in the language that we hear presented to us, whether it's on social media or otherwise. Everything is about, oh, try to remove stress, decrease stress. People forget there's eustress, there's distress. You need stress. That is why we change. That's why we evolve. And so it's kind of like when people say control your emotions. I've never really been a big fan of that. I understand what people are getting at, but you have to manage it. You just have to do your best. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not in control. There's the illusion of, and that's what a lot of, I think, this consumerism of these biohacks or just anything we buy into, even in the leadership space, is it's this illusion of control where it's like, no, the best we can do is manage it. And, you know, like, so when you do this, let's imagine somebody's listening right now. And they had an anxious morning. They read an email that really pissed them off. They have their staff is driving them nuts. Maybe they're short on cash, and so they're not even sure if they're going to be able to pay their bills today. Whatever that is, they're in that cycle of stress. I know that there's many options, so I'm not going to ask you for the best. I'm not going to put that, you know, pressure on you. What is just one thing that somebody that's driving in their car right now that's experiencing those things could do in a very practical sense?
The first thing is, you know, I like what you said about stress. You know, it's not good or bad. It just is. It is. You got to be able to grow from it. We need it. And so much stuff is reframing your mindset around that. So not thinking about, I mean, there's a ton of research once you reframe your mindset and realize, all right, I can kind of grow from the stress. So that would be the first thing. Think about that. And then, all right, notice you're driving in your car. You're probably, you know, in Memphis, we got crazy drivers going all over the place. Instead of getting upset at them, watch how you're breathing. Take a just small breath in through your nose, longer little exhale out of your mouth. Just focus on that for a minute and see if that changes your state. Yeah, more than anything, instead of getting too upset, come back to something like that. Kind of anchor yourself. It could even be looking outside. You know, got the outside the window right here. Look outside, look into the you know, out on the horizon, look at some trees as opposed to staring at your computer screen if you got that email from your boss, because that email from your boss is setting off the same physiological reactions in your nervous system that we had from, you know, like they say, running from the lion back in the day. It's the same type of stress response. Now it just happens emotionally as opposed to physically. So, you know, I would say watch your breathing is the first thing, and, you know, change your mindset around what you're thinking about stress in general.
Great example, framing there too, right? That's a huge part of it, just cognitive behavioral therapy. And, you know, sometimes I forget, just because you heard so much about it in the space that I was typically in, the performance world, how many people are confused about how they should breathe? My dad came down to visit, right? Just to ground this conversation. And my dad's scalenes and just, my dad thinks he has all this these nerve issues in his neck. And I'm not trivializing his pain, Dad. So if you're listening, you know, but he's had the scans, he's had this, and I get my hands on him and I can tell, all right, your traps, all this is a mess. And I just ask him, you know, how do you breathe? And I can see, right? I can watch, but not everybody's going to be trained in this. Not that it takes any esoteric skill. I just mean, like, I knew what to look for given my history. And you can see that my dad is, you know, just elevating his shoulders when he breathes. And so he goes, well, you know, I try not to breathe through my stomach. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, I just feel like I have a gut. So I have a tendency to, you know, suck it in and I try to breathe. And I'm like, well, Dad, you know, and I start to explain it to them a little bit. But just for the general layperson, or even just as a reminder for somebody that does know this, how should we breathe? Is it through your, I know diaphragmatic breathing, but what does that mean? What does that look like? And how can the average person assess practically how they're breathing to just see like, shit, is this wrong? And why is it wrong?
That's a great one. And, you know, should is an interesting word. I'll say it kind of depends on what you're doing. If you're just sitting here at your computer answering emails or, you know, on a meeting, you should be most likely breathing through your nose. You know, thinking about breathing low down belly, ribs area, and breathing slower. So, you know, as opposed to what you just talking about, that upper chest, which typically means people are breathing in and out of their mouth, so they're breathing more than they actually need. And that upper chest breathing is using the secondary respiratory muscles, your neck, your shoulders, your traps, things like that, which causes more tension there and also just kind of sets off the cycle in your brain that's monitoring your breath rate and monitoring that stuff, being like, all right, my diaphragm is not getting as much blood. It's not working like it should be. So I'm creating more of a stress response in myself naturally. So we like to talk, just say everyday breathing. First thing we tell people to do, which has a huge impact more than I think anything else, is breathe lower, breathe slower, and through the nose. You can easily just take your hands and kind of cross them over your belly and focus on, can you feel your ribs separate? We want more of a horizontal pattern as opposed to a vertical. That's the easiest way, I think, to remember it.
That's I'm making a note right now to text one of my friends, lower, slower through your nose. You know, I had always heard if you had a tire around your midsection, right, you want to be able to fill up in that 360 degree and fill out that tire. Yeah. I do think that those things are really helpful. And one thing that I'm surprised I've never heard more about, and it's funny because you think of the amount of the population in the world that deals with allergies and other things. And admittedly, this is biased because when you were coaching me, and what I later found out is, you know, I have a deviated septum. And in about a week, I'm going to get a septoplasty and about three other things done. And maybe that, I think some of that goes back to boxing or what have you. But I very rarely, I've never heard any one of these quote unquote breathing experts out there address, well, what if I can't breathe through my nose because it's literally so jacked up, or I have allergies, or there's literally, I mean, my ENT said, wow, your septum deviates one way here and another way there. I don't even know how you breathe through your nose. And so that goes back to that optimization idea, right? Is we speak to people as if everybody's got these capabilities, and from a practical sense, they do. But you also need to speak to the people that need it most. It's almost like, and I know this is long-winded, but like it's like 99% of the fitness advice out there is geared towards people that are already active and love to work out. I feel like it's the same thing sometimes with breathing advice. It's like people that are already okay duct taping their mouth or whatever. Let's talk about the other stuff. What if you're messed up in that fashion?
Well, you know, some people do have to have the surgeries like you're going to have. You know, we definitely see that when you actually can't breathe. There's obviously some tools that can help kind of open up your airways. There's some just techniques. But one of the big one is, you know, we see a lot of people, they've just been breathing in and out of their mouth so long that they've lost the ability to breathe through their nose because that tissue is just kind of, you know, it is expanded. And so it's made smaller. So if you start slowly incorporating just nasal breathing into your day, you'll realize, all right, it's really hard at first. Week later, it's starting to get a little easier, and it gets a little easier and gets less. So it's kind of like a use it or lose it aspect. So I would say just keep focusing on it. If you start breathing in and out of your mouth because you can't, you get too stuffy, then you have to do that. You know, you're not going to die. Body's very adaptable.
Wait a minute. You're not going to die.
Might not be optimal.
If you're not optimal, you won't die.
Yes. I mean, everybody's trying to be perfect this day and age, but that's impossible. And like you said, we're all not built the same. You know, there are some techniques if you do have allergies that you can kind of clear your nose, some small exhale breath holes or things we use that can, you know, just doing like five or six rounds where you breathe in through your nose, breathe out, hold it, kind of move around, build up some heat, let the CO2 build up in your system, then breathe back in through your nose so that carbon dioxide kind of opens up the airways, nitric oxide in your nasal passages, they'll help open it up. You know, if you don't have anything major, those kind of little things can work. You know, sometimes you need to use saline spray and stuff like that.
I was going to ask, what were your thoughts on kind of the Neomed sinus rinses? I mean, obviously, we're not,
I love that stuff.
Yeah, that made a huge difference.
Like saline spray, things like that, I think are great. You know, things like Afrin, I would say, are more of a break glass in the case of emergency, kind of only don't use them consistently because even, you know, your ENT is going to tell you not to do that. That says it even on the bottle. But, you know, saline sprays, rinses, stuff like that can help a lot, you know. And I battled allergies for a long time. Had, you know, taken allergy shots my whole life as a kid, was a mouth breather. So when I first started transitioning and learning about all this stuff and how important it wasn't easy for me either. Then I started running, just breathing in and out of my nose. That was really, really hard. Thought I was going to die. But it's one of those things, it's kind of like staying with it. Like when you start working out or doing anything, it doesn't feel good at first. It hurts. It's painful. But if you kind of keep going, you'll see change and see things happen that's going to help him create some improvement in your life.
Yeah, those are great tips. Are you familiar with the comedian Neil Bargatze or Nate Bargatze?
We love him.
Yeah.
He is so funny.
His part on Afrin. Do you remember that? It was on, did you hear his little spiel on Afrin when he was on Saturday Night Live?
No, I think I missed that one.
I won't get into it. I don't want to take away from your time, but you know, he was sitting there talking about how he had to take his dad to the doctor or whatever. And it was clear that he had been abusing Afrin, and he had said, the doctor asked, how long have you been using Afrin? And he basically gave him some BS answer. And the wife was like, no, you've been using it for about 40 years. and he's like, you know, it says very clearly, do not use past 2 days. As a matter of fact, I don't know anything that's good enough for you that you should use it for 40 years straight. And he said,
that's right.
He goes, of course, my dad sits there and is like, I work too damn hard not to use Afrin in my own house. And, I have had to, I remember when I travel, right? Because we live in the desert now, so my breathing is so much better than when I was in the kind of humid environment in Atlanta. But I remember I had to go speak at this event in Connecticut in the fall, and it was wet and it was dingy. And the minute I got off the plane, nothing's coming through my nose. I'm not sleeping. I'm sitting here and, you know, I got to present. So it's the last thing you want is to be sleep deprived and have cognitive delay. So like I have emergency Afrin for those situations. And I'm just like, this must be what it's like for normal people to breathe. But yeah, I think you make a good point. And if anybody wonders for screwed up people like me, go to Costco. You can get a massive block of Neomed sinus rinses. You'll be good. But I'm just, you know, I'm glad that you talk about that because most people don't ever say things. Is there anything else you want to talk about that? Or I have another question that I think would be really practical.
Let's hear it.
All right. So you working with the clients that you do, there's going to be people that have to run a lot of meetings, people that are teaching, people that have to do a lot of sales. They're talking a lot. I even think about when I present or we talk about this at speaker school, which is coming up for us. When you do have to talk for an extended period of time, it can be even tougher to manage a breathing. Of course, you can pause like I just did and take a breath through your nose. But, you know, I have to be careful of not even doing that through the microphone. That can be weird for pacing when you're having a conversation. So what are some tips and strategies you tell your clients or people that, hey, talking a lot is part of their life and they're not going to be able to do it in this measured, slow tone where they get to take a breath every time in between? Are there things they can do before, after? Go wherever you want with this.
Yeah, I would say don't worry about it while you're speaking. For one, there's no reason to add something else to be thinking about. Focus on whatever you're talking about, your presentation, your meeting, more than anything. Now, before, I would say give yourself 5 minutes and just kind of ground yourself. Give yourself, you know, a little bit time to just somewhat down-regulate, whether it's just breathing in and out of your nose, breathe in, pause, out, pause. I mean, you can just do that and not even focus on any like special technique. That's great. After the meeting, do the same thing. Just kind of check in. You've been breathing in and out of your mouth a lot. So you've been blowing off a lot of CO2, which is basically going to constrict your airways, constrict your blood vessels, going to not get as much oxygen to your brain. That's why you get tired after all that. You know, you're expending a whole lot of energy. So can you get outside, maybe walk around, just spend a few minutes breathing in and out of your nose there, just kind of somewhat down regulate if you can, you know, more of using those little, what we call transitions. If you're speaking a lot, doing meetings, if it's just 1 minute, that's fine. you know, the more you practice kind of these techniques outside of a chaotic situation, the easier you can use it in a chaotic situation to kind of calm down. So, you know, before you're getting there, kind of getting prepped, spending like 5 minutes, and then after, just giving yourself some time, and might not be doing a breath session, might be just walking around, but you can always just take that breath in through your nose, out through your nose while you're going through a walk, especially if it's sunny outside. That's going to make you feel a whole lot better.
Yeah, it's a good point. And one thing that I do too, when I'm presenting and I feel, okay, I've been speaking for a while, I can start to feel my heart rate increase, or I feel the need to kind of just slow things down, I make sure that I use what we call just an audience interaction moment. I'll make it a point to ask a reflection question, pass the ball to one of our facilitators, do something like that. And when they do that, that's my micro moment. That's when I try to take, and I don't really worry about the tempo at that point. I do know it's valuable, and I want you to give us some insight there. I know there's a lot of different aspects of that, but I just try to make sure, okay, can I breathe through my nose for at least 3 seconds, out through my mouth? Just now is my time to get caught up. And it's tricky, admittedly, because you hope that when you ask that question or you pass the ball, they take it for a minute or two. But every now and then you can get something that's like, yeah, well, I don't really know. And then you're like, okay, next. But you know, I think just finding little micro moments, as you alluded to, whether it's before, after, or when you ask somebody a question or you involve a team member, is a great chance to play catch up there, right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And you know, going through your coalition, those weekend kind of workshops that you put on, you're doing a whole lot of speaking. And you do a great job of passing it off to the other people who are working there, along with getting everybody incorporated. And then that, you know, and like you're mentioning, kind of the tempo, you know, slow your exhale down. That's the easiest way to do it, in through the nose, and just think about breathe in slowly and out slower. Don't get too complicated. You know, I can get on all that exact tempos you want, but the easiest thing is slowly in, slower out. And if you're struggling, you know, it's like telling anybody calm down, that doesn't work. You know, slow down. That'll help you drop into a de-stressed state pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, that's how, and I was going to ask about that, if you wouldn't mind, and knowing that there's myriad forms of it, what are some general rules of tempos? What are the fundamentals, the basics, the stuff that if you have the most stubborn person in your life ever that doesn't want to do this kind of stuff, whatever, at the very least you can say, hey, if nothing else, Vivica, Tom, Ron, Dad, Mom, Susie, Sally, at least do this. This will help you, right? Are there a couple just standards that you live or die by?
That slow exhale for when you're stressed out, that's more calming, more parasympathetic, drops your heart rate. Inhale's more activating, more sympathetic. So elongating your inhale over your exhale is going to help you get a little boost of energy. Also like to create a little pause, whether it's in pause, out pause, just doing that, what it's called, the space between the breath, not rushing onto your next breath, because most people were trying to rush onto everything in life. And if you can create just a little bit of space there, it can help you create space otherwise. It just gives you that ability to kind of pause before you respond and react. You know, it just, that's a big part of it too. You know, you can go into all sorts of techniques, but that is like just two of my kind of favorite things just to help people down. We deal with a lot of people struggle sleeping at night, whether they wake up in the middle of the night thinking about the emails, the work, their kids, whatever, or they just can't go to bed. You know, so we just, you know, one of the easiest things I'll tell them to do is just breathe in slowly, hold it till you're ready to breathe out, then slower out of the mouth, and just keep focused on that, and then pause at the end. So don't even worry about time. If you're not listening to me, I've got plenty of recordings that I'll send clients to listen to, but you're not going to pick up your phone or anything in the middle of the night. That's going to help keep you up anyway. So just breathe in, hold it. Once you're ready to let it go, breathe out slower.
So you don't worry
at the bottom before you start back on.
You don't worry anything. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. You're not so worried about a number count or anything. And if somebody does need something to focus on, is there one 3 seconds in, 6 seconds in? You know, what would you go to?
Doubling your exhale to your inhale for something like that. So there we would typically go in for about 3 to 4 seconds, hold for about 3 to 4, out for 6 to 8. Is a very kind of calming deactivation strategy that we typically use. And, you know, that can help you bring your heart rate down after a workout. It can help you kind of when you're sleeping or when you're a little stressed out, but always kind of that doubling of the exhale to inhale. You know, people who've been doing breathing techniques for a long time, that could be breathing in for 10 seconds and out for 20. Somebody who's just starting, it could be in for two and out for four.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing we kind of teach, like, right out of
Yeah, because it can be tricky. I remember when you first start doing these things and you hear some of the tempo, you're like, damn, I don't know if I can breathe in that much or if I can hold that much. And then that stresses you out more. And so it's a good point to just, hey, don't worry so much about the numbers. I wonder about this too, and whether we look at this as an affordance or a constraint, something that helps. You know, my son, when he was two, had a lot of problems with just drainage, and, you know, he's going through the daycare phase, so he always had something. And we had a non-medicated, you know, all natural kind of VapoRub, right, so to speak. And it was because when he would try to breathe, we'd say, hey, buddy, breathe, just take a time, take a minute. It was so abstract to him, like, breathe what? And so I was like, well, let's give him something to smell. Let's give him something that kind of focuses attention on that. So we had this kind of non-medicated, all natural. Again, so any parents out there that are like freaking out that I'm like smothering my kid in Vicks VapoRub, relax, I'm not doing that. But we just put a little bit under his nose and on his chest. And, you know, he was aware of that smell now, like, oh, well, like, that's it. And so, yeah, buddy, like, just try to breathe that in for 3 seconds, I'd count. And it worked. And I know that can be N equals one, but what is, like, is there something about, like, if somebody's just like, hey, the breathing stuff is a bit abstract, you know, can they do something like experiment with scents or something like that, or breathing in a warm mist that kind of helps focus that on an external thing that also helps them internally? Or are you against that? Does that make sense?
I missed a little bit of that, but I think it, you know, basically you're telling your son, breathe in, like, smell the flowers, kind of focus on exhaling out, you know, blowing out a candle. Something like that is a great way to, you know, especially for kids, to kind of understand that. We also use, you know, like your hand, you know, just kind of, you can trace out your hand as you breathe for 5 breaths, as a way to kind of slow it down. I think can help a lot. You know, with kids, you can place a teddy, you know, a little stuffed animal on their belly and have them just watch that rise and fall. So, you know, things like that, anything that kind of can help anchor you, I think, is a good technique.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you can tell you've done this for a long time and you understand the psychology behind it. Whenever you use terms like anchoring and framing, you know, it always brings a smile to my face because that is what it is, right? It's anchoring, framing, priming. Those are those things. And sometimes we forget it's that simple. It's the stuff that your grandma would do that brings us back to sometimes the most innovative things in today's day and age. It goes back to that simplicity. All right, let's get into a bit of nuance here. One of my closest friends is a staunch advocate of taping his mouth shut at night. Now, this would be miserable for me based on where I am with my ENT stuff. He swears it makes his sleep better. I think once, although I could be full of it, you told me you do that too. Can you explain it for the audience out there that's like, what the hell, why, and how? And by the way, are you using duct tape? What's going on here? Can you talk about this a little bit in terms of theory and practice and potential benefits?
Yes, I'm a big fan. So when I went to that first XPT experience in 2017, Laird told us about it. And I was like, well, he's crazy. And he's like, everybody do it tonight. Y'all do it. And did it. And I was like, all right, this is interesting. Then, you know, if you think about it, like, on a science background, okay, if you're sitting there and you're breathing in and out of your mouth all night long, you're keeping your body in more stressed state. You're not going to be able to rest and recover as much as you would. You tape your mouth and breathe through your nose. You know, that's a third of your day. You're already going to begin to improve how you can breathe. And one of the things, you know, I use it a lot during, like, you know, nowadays I'll do it a few times a week, but when I travel, I find it is a game changer for my sleep, especially when I go to altitude. Going to altitude, it's very easy to breathe in and out of your mouth, wake up with a super dry mouth, feel like you hadn't slept well at all. I tape my mouth and I can breathe through my nose all night long and I feel well rested when I wake up the next day and don't have a lot of trouble with altitude. But when I first started doing it, I think we did it every day almost for, you know, probably I would say five out of 7 days a week for a few months. And I was sort of noticing how rested I felt when I woke up. I just felt a lot better. I didn't wake up as much in the middle of the night. So that's something, you know, clients who are open to it, we, you know, we give them mouth tape. That's kind of one of the things. I use a brand called ELVT, which I like a lot, or just 3M Micropore hypoallergenic tape that you can buy, you know, at Walgreens or Amazon, whatever. That's the cheapest. You can buy like 10 rolls of that for 10 bucks and it's going to last you forever. But everybody likes to sell products and they can cost a whole lot more. The ELVT tape does feel better and it has like little slits so you can breathe in and out of your mouth if you need to. You can talk with it on. You don't need a lot. I see some of these tapes that are just like, it covers your entire face almost. I'm like, that seems horrible. And it seems like that would send your nervous system up to a stress state too, because you're like, is somebody kidnapping me? What's going on here?
Right.
You know, and when you first start doing it, it typically it's not going to stay on. Like your body is pretty smart. It's going to rip it off if it needs to rip it off in the middle of the night. And I think I woke up with it with my hair on my pillow, on my chest, you know, for probably 4 or 5 nights in a row. I don't think I ever slept with it when I first started doing it. It would go on when I first started and then I'd wake up and it'd be somewhere else. Yeah. But I love it. I think it's great. And I use it all the time. When I know I hadn't slept well in a few nights, I'm going to do it the next night.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward once I get this surgery done to try that. Although I can't imagine. Yeah. I mean, not that it would happen. At least I hope not. But somebody walks into the room, because I already sleep with an eye mask because I'm very sensitive to light. And Liz, you know, will wake up or you know, just there's so many. I am very hyper aware of my surroundings. So sensory wise, right, I need it dark as hell. And I have earplugs in ever since we had a kid because, you know, we'll still have the monitor in there to make sure our son's okay and whatever. So if you hear him cough, I'm up. So I have earplugs, an eye mask. Now I'm going to look like it's like from Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean? Like people are going to wonder if this is a date night thing that you do for a while. But no, it is fascinating. And I have to imagine for anybody that hasn't tried it at first, there almost has to be a little bit of a sense of panic, but it sounds like the science is sound. And, you know, if you have articles, you know, on any of those kinds of things or the underlying mechanism, shoot them over. We'll put them in the show notes.
Okay. And what I tell people when they first start doing it, do it for like 5 to 10 minutes before you go to bed and then take it off.
Yeah.
Get yourself used to it before you start. And if it's going to stress you out, it's like anything. If it's going to stress you out more, don't do it. If you're freaking out, you know, don't worry about it. But get, you know, try it out 5 to 10 minutes before you go to bed, walk around the house with it, and just give it a shot that way. And then once you're comfortable, try it when you start to go to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the eye mask too. I wear one every night.
Got it.
That's another thing that travels with me, or I wear it no matter what every night at home. It's key.
Now we've talked a lot about many of the benefits and anybody should get it. I think breathing is the physiological, literally the physiological equivalent to the importance of communication and that it's ubiquitous. We're going to do it every day. So many hidden forces that it's going to impact in your life. So we get the benefits. But as I stated, one reason I'm friends with you and I have such respect for you and I hired you as my coach is you're not some absolutist guru that, you know, thinks that it's going to cure every single thing. So you're aware of limitations, or at least practices that may have limitations. So we've talked about things at work that are undoubtedly just, hey, this can benefit your life. What are some limitations of certain breathing techniques, either things that were once popular that now don't really have that much efficacy, or as you've alluded to, even if it's like, hey, well, if you get too caught up on the nuance of tempo breathing and numbers that it becomes a stressor, you've already hinted at some of them, but what are some limitations that you've encountered or things that you just don't really think are as practical as maybe the mainstream media or somebody else might think?
Well, one of the things you see a lot these days is just a lot of fast, rapid hyperventilation type breathing, that Wim Hof style, which I like. It's one of the things that really got me into it. I loved, but I think it's kind of can be pushed too far where people, that's like all they're doing. And I'm like, well, if you're over breathing in your everyday life, you're breathing in and out of your mouth, you don't have the fundamentals there. And then you're doing these more intense type methods that are also kind of pushing you into that stress state, which if you have severe anxiety, severe issues or heart issues, there's a lot of contraindications to some of these breathing techniques. Or if you're doing something and the person who's coaching you through it, you know, they aren't really equipped because you can have emotions come up, traumatic stuff that can be involved come up. And if they can't you know, be there and hold the space for that, you know, they could do more harm than good. So it is, you know, not every type of technique that out there. I mean, there's something that it can benefit some people, but not everybody needs to do all of it. And, you know, I'll see a lot of people who kind of end those type of techniques right out of the gate. And we're like, okay, we're going to take you the exact opposite way. If you've been doing that intense breathing, it's like going in and trying to, you know, deadlift 500 pounds when you can barely pick up the bar or haven't even ever tried. It's like, I don't know if that's the best thing for you.
Yeah.
It can do a lot, but you got to be careful and got to make sure you're doing everything else on the other side. If you can, I would say first fix that everyday breathing and then kind of worry about getting into some of those techniques, because they're, you know, just because it makes you feel good doesn't mean in the long term it's good, because if that was the case, then we could all just do drugs and, you know,
right,
constantly all day long. And then, you know, we feel good, but there are long-term implications for doing that too much.
Yeah. No. And another thing I want to ask you within that is, you know, anything that we do, even if we're experts at it, we live by it, die by it, all those things we can still struggle with. So for example, we're about to run another apprenticeship. There's a lot of what we call social scrimmaging and role-playing. You've been through that. And we've continued to alter it. It puts people in low stakes situations, but they still have to deal with conflict in real time, right? They have to deal with that boss or that passive aggressive person or whatever. And even though I teach this, I do this, there's elements or times in my life where I struggle as a communicator, right? There's plenty of things that I struggle with, even if I know better, even if I have all those pieces, just like I have a background in strength and conditioning. There's times where, hey, you know, I'm not going to be as active as I want to be because I need to prioritize something else, or I have to do this. What are some things that you've struggled with, even though you know best practices, or some things that you still feel like, damn, I don't do this as well as I'd like to with my ought self here?
Not being overreactive and defensive, you know, in relationships when getting feedback or, you know, getting in an argument with somebody, you know, not creating that space that I talk about so often, and being reactionary. I look at them like I've come a long way. Used to be a whole lot worse 10 years ago. But, you know, it's something I still struggle with, you know, staying under control in situations, not, you know, kind of getting upset for things that really don't matter. You know, being able to kind of roll with the punches sometimes, it still gets me, because it's life. I'm a human, you know, it's going to happen. So if it didn't, I'd probably be on a monk on a mountain somewhere, but that's, you know, I'm not really able to do that. Or do I really want to do that? No, I'd rather live life and experience the ups and downs, because the ups and downs are, part of the joy of it all.
Yeah, no,
I struggle with that, and I struggle with, you know, staying consistent, you know, and doing like going to bed when I want to go to bed sometimes. You know, people think will look at me and say, I'm very disciplined in what I do. Well, sometimes I am, but, you know, I also have times where I'm not. So it's just kind of go through cycles. And I think we all got to deal with that. You know, now, you know, I've got a 5-month-old at home. Stuff doesn't always go as planned anymore. And just kind of letting go of that plan or the expectation, the story that I'd created in my head of what I thought something was going to be that day, might not turn out that way.
Yeah, no, it's valuable perspective. What time do you go to bed now, and how has that changed with your little one, with little Lee there?
We go to bed, typically try to be asleep at like 9.
Time out. You just said you don't go to bed all the time when you want to, but you go to sleep, like you're in bed, you walk to bed at 9, or you try to be asleep by 9?
No, we'll get in bed during the week. We'll get in bed usually 8:30-ish, but sometimes we'll get stuck watching a show and, you know, go to bed at like 9:30. I don't ever stay up till like midnight, maybe on Friday night or something like that. But if I do that, I'm just dead. I know that. But during the week, you know, I go to sleep pretty early, but, you know, sometimes I might be on my phone longer than I want to, or I'm watching a show as opposed to, you know, hanging out and relaxing with my wife, or, you know, we're kind of doing things in that realm. So I'm like, we might be on our computers working as opposed to spending time with each other, like we talk about and say we should be doing, yeah. You know, but we do get to sleep. And luckily, she is a good sleeper. The girl sleeps from 7 to 7 right now. We're hoping that stays for as long as we can keep it.
Yeah, that's incredible. No, I mean, that's one thing that has changed a lot. I mean, I've always been a little bit of a night owl. I will go to bed around midnight or 1, and then my body usually wakes me up automatically sometime between 6:30 and 7:30. But with Bronson, you know, we usually, his bedtime, we try to get him ready for bed starting at 7. He'll have to brush his teeth. We read him books because that's a huge part of, obviously, language and cognitive development, and it's just something we value as a family. But that bedtime routine alone takes an hour, you know, by the time you've got him bathed and brushed and all this. And then Liz and I, after that, are like, all right, now we get to spend time with our, you know, it's you and me. And so that's something that we've had to, when people say, oh, what's changed the most since you're a father and this, and they expect some big, crazy answer. And I'm like, really? Just my nighttime routine, because picking him up from daycare at from 5:30 to 8:30, or from 5, really, no, sorry, yeah, from 4:30, really, to 8:30, that is all dead time now in terms of work, right? That's family time, bedtime. And so then we need time to wind down, be us, catch up on house stuff, because we're working the rest of the day. And that's one that you can't really win very easily, at least not in our house.
That's 100%. It's like our same thing for us. It's like once that evening rolls around, it's just everything else is gone. It is either getting her from daycare, you know, feeding her. We have a whole bedtime routine with her as well. Listening to music with her and kind of, you know, we sing to her, do stuff like that at this age, try to read her some books. She's not very interested in that, but five months old. But, you know, it's very much focused on her until we get her to bed at 7:30 or so. And then it's like, all right, now we've got some time where maybe we can hang out, might watch a show or, you know, something like that. But it's noticing that that's the hardest thing. One of the biggest things I've noticed is like late afternoon on, it's good luck trying to do anything. If I hadn't gotten to somebody by 4:30 ish, I'm probably not going to respond to you till the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Hey, by the way, like, why don't we get that as adults? Why don't we get some, maybe this will happen when AI and robots be, you know, why don't we get somebody that sings to us and reads to us? And we're, you know, that's what we really need. That's what I'm going to invest in is you want a real night.
Probably all be, calmer and much happier.
Yeah. Robot just rubs your back, kind of chills you, you know, for some people that's creepy. It depends if your thing looks like Ex Machina. We don't know. Well, listen, I value you tremendously. You are such a good, not only just person, practitioner, but really good guest. I don't say this often on the air, but like just getting right to it, giving answers, being practical, real, grounded. It makes it a pleasure, and it makes it something that you know that there's nobody that could not listen to this episode and be like, all right, I don't have at least 3 things that are stuff that I could do right now. And I want to continue to support your work. So if people are interested in hiring you as a coach, or they want to bring you in, or they just want to learn from you and all the different ways, where can they go? How can they support you? Where should we direct them? Go ahead and tell them.
Our website is www.symmetry.live, LIVE. And you can also find us on Instagram at symmetry.live. Those are 2 easy places to find me and get in touch with me.
Phenomenal. And as always, we'll put that in the show notes. Well, Taylor, you get the final word. Otherwise, I want to thank you for coming on. And I know, like I said, this is an episode that I can't wait to get out there and people will value. Anything you want to say as a final word?
You know, I just want to say that people, you know, you're stronger than you think you are. You can do more than you think you do. So many people kind of get stuck in the rut, and we get stuck in these unconscious patterns of things that we've been doing our whole life and think that's just the way it is. But you can change those. You just got to put a little effort, time, and work into it.
Excellent point. Well, I appreciate you again. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Please send it to a friend, a family member, anybody that you think can use this. Breathing can change so much about your health, your stress, and your life. We believe in it. Thank you again, Taylor, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brett.